We are live for another great edition. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio and Impact Media. This is another great edition of Sports Club. Of course, that makes me your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Tonight, we are joined by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing just awesome. I know you have limited time, so we will get to some Packer stuff and other stuff here shortly. And, of course, joined all the way from his early siesta today, he is Superman Cody Elias. How you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, great to be back. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, it is draft day, and I know our guest is on the line. I'll bring him on shortly. But, Cody, I just have to ask, this being draft day, as big as this day could be, have you tried to see if your good buddy Mania will come to your birthday party?
I wish. I mean, that was electric last weekend watching that happen. Since it happened against Boston, I mean, even better because, I'll just leave it as it was, as saying, because it was against Boston.
As a diehard New York fan, I will definitely agree with that. We will get more into what we're talking about in case you guys don't know. But without further ado, I want to bring on our very special guest. He is from Pro Sports Room and WBLZ Sports. He is Mike Sigmund. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Jeremy. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We all made the executive decision that we will watch the draft from our homes and avoided the crowds, and I believe you're doing the same.
I'm actually going to Disney in about 5 minutes to go watch the Jets pick, and then I'll be watching the Avengers. So I'm doing
now,
a little bit different.
Now, of course, do you mean the actual Marvel Avengers, or do you mean that's the new nickname of the guy you guys are going to draft tonight?
Both.
But, you know, I want to start right there and say the Jets obviously have the number 3 pick. They will be behind Cleveland at 1 and the, I guess, cross-state rivals, the Giants, even though you guys share a stadium. How do you see this thing playing out for the Jets?
I feel like the Jets are going to go best quarterback available at this point. There have been a lot of smoke screens going up throughout this offseason. Everyone wasn't quite sure who was going to go 1, who was going to go 2. But I have a feeling that the Jets are going to land Sam Darnold tonight, and we're going to get Hey Darnold and the whole football club in New York City tonight.
I like that. As a Nickelodeon kid growing up, Hey Darnold, that's I like that. We'll just stick with
yeah.
that. I like that right now. That's got T-shirt written all over it. You know, obviously, the Jets, according to even people, great experts like myself, I had them picked to be dead last year, and they surprised us all and showed each other and showed everybody that they could win a lot of games. Depending on how this draft goes, do you feel like they can build on that, or do you feel like they are still a couple years away?
Honestly, I feel like with the additions that we've made in the offseason, picking up Avery Williamson, picking up Tremaine Johnson, adding Terrell Pryor, just as more depth into the wide receiver group, adding Isaiah Crowell, we're adding more depth. And the best part about all the depth that Mike McKagan, the New York Jets general manager, is adding is that all of the players that we have added, besides Josh McCown, are all under the age of 29. So they're going for future. They're going for long term. And I feel like with all the additions that we've made and how well Josh McCown played last year, not knowing the system to 100%, now the Jets could easily go 8-8 this year. And that's before this, you know, before seeing what the Jets draft and everything like that. I feel like the Jets have a very good chance of surprising a couple teams. They just have to make sure that they stay in it the entire game and show everybody the chip on their shoulder that they had last year.
No, Mike, I have a question for you. With Todd Bowles, if the Jets don't hit 8-8 this year, and I love the signing of Terrell Pryor. I went to high school with Terrell. I know Terrell very well. I want to ask you, though, if if the Jets don't hit 8-8, is this Todd Bowles' last year in New York?
Unfortunately, I think it will be, because it's just the New York Jets fan base. You know, everyone wants to win now. They want a Super Bowl now. We've been waiting 40, 50-plus years since Broadway Joe predicted that he was going to win the Super Bowl. So Jets fans are wanting it now. But me personally, I'm not big on firing a coach after 3 to 4 years. They still got to wean out all the people that were there before. They can't just, as much as you would want to walk into a new roster and go, all right, I'm cutting everybody on this one and I'm going to bring in a whole bunch of new people, it doesn't really work that way. So I feel like I personally would give Todd Bowles 2 more years, including this year. So this year and then next year. And if he doesn't make the playoffs by then that's when it would kind of get sketchy. But, I mean, his first year he went 10-6 and missed the playoffs with Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, I mean, I got to cut him some slack. Now he's hopefully going to be getting one of the best young quarterbacks in the league, or, you know, in the draft. So that'll help him to be able to build an actual offense instead of having – 2 38-39-year-old quarterbacks lead your team.
Well, you know, quickly, I have a follow-up on that.
Okay, go ahead.
I just want to say, do you trust – it's not more Todd Bowles, but do you trust the Jets coaching staff and scouting and development? Because they drafted Christian Hackenberg a couple years ago out of Penn State, and the guy hasn't even taken a snap yet, and he was supposed to be the next big thing. Do you believe in Bowles and his staff that they get – Sam Darnold, or they get Josh Rosen, or someone like, or even Josh Allen, if they follow them at 3, do you have faith in them to develop a young quarterback?
I have faith in them to develop the right young quarterback, if that makes sense. Josh Rosen is the quarterback that has a high floor, low ceiling. He's the most NFL quarterback ready. You're not going to see much upside from him, from his counterpart, as in Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold has so much potential. He could grow into so much, but if Sam Darnold doesn't go to the right team, then it's not going to work out for him. I think that with Jeremy Bates, the new offensive coordinator for the New York Jets, I feel like he does a really good job of bringing up these quarterbacks, and I don't think that anybody had faith in Christian Hackenberg, and that's the bad part. They spent their money on Christian Hackenberg. They drafted Christian Hackenberg, and it was somewhat of a wasteful pick, but not – the best part is that they didn't stick him out there and go, all right, look, we know you don't have it, so let's just throw you out there instead. So they were kind of like, hey, you don't have it. We're just going to keep going with Bryce Petty and Ryan Fitzpatrick and Christian Hackenberg and Geno Smith, all these guys who sound terrible, but they're not as terrible as you. So I feel like Christian Hackenberg didn't have everything that Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen does, but he could be somewhat as Josh Allen, where they both have big arms, but when they played against big time schools, they didn't do a lot.
Yeah, I would say Christian Hackenberg was the battlefield earth of the NFL, where you spent your money on it and you really wish you could get that back. But we're talking with Mike Sigmon of Pro Sports Room, talking Jets and the draft. You know, we talked about if this was Todd Bowles last year. Coach, this is where I'm going to bring you in. So, Coach, if the Jets were to call you about taking over for Todd Bowles, would you take over this team?
that would be one of those tough decisions to make. One thing about the NFL, and I liked what was said earlier, was the fact that you don't want to just cut coaches loose, because it gives a false sense of reality when you bring a new coaching staff in. A coach has had to basically go through the blender, if you will, and trying to build a roster. And a lot of times coaches don't have a lot of say-so in that. It's based on the general manager. So as you slowly build this team and you start to get the pieces together and you finally can start seeing what the picture is going to look like, if you don't allow that coach to play that out, then another coach comes in, those players step up based on the hard work of someone else, and then you let them go. And you go, well, what if I would have held on to them? So I'm hoping that Bowles will be able to last. I do agree that you shouldn't allow, you know, you shouldn't just cut them loose after a season or two. And I know fans get antsy, but again, there is a process that goes along with drafting players and building a team.
Yeah, Definitely so. And Mike, to throw it back to you, what other areas should the Jets really try to attack with this year's draft? I know they have a decent amount of picks, as they tend to do, but, I mean, like you said, beyond getting the obvious either best quarterback on the board or best player on the board at that point, where else do they need the most help?
Honestly, I feel like the Jets could really benefit from, and I know this sounds weird, but a more defensive line. I mean, if you look back at the last five or six Jets picks, you go, well, haven't you guys always drafted defensive line? Majority, mm-hmm. Yes. but with losing Sheldon Richardson and losing Muhammad Wilkerson and all of the other interior linemen, we still have Leonard Williams, but adding, you know, a little bit more depth to that would be great, along with offensive line. Other than that, I don't think that we need anything else. I feel like we're okay at receiver because Anunwall's coming back, and then you have Kearse and Pryor and Robbie Anderson. Running backs you're okay with Isaiah Crowell, Bilal Powell, Elijah McGuire. You know, we're adding depth through free agency, and we're adding more depth through the draft. So me personally, if I were in the war room, I would be screaming quarterback, and just one quarterback, not four, just one quarterback, and then offensive, defensive line, and maybe another corner or two. But that's about it.
Now, Mike, I got a question for you. This is a little different, but it ties back with the Jets. It also brings in the Giants as well. The bigger story after this weekend will be who the Jets and the Giants draft, or Mike Francesa returning to the airwaves in New York.
It'll probably be Mike Francesa going back to the airwaves.
I totally agree with that.
After him begging to get back on, I think that he'll be. I think once he gets back on the air, everyone's gonna be like, "Yeah, I don't know who drafted who. I just wanted to hear Mike Francesa and see what he has to say."
I know I'll be tuning in to hear what he has to say on his first days back.
It's gonna be crazy.
But as we finish up with Mike's segment of Pro Sports Room and WBLZ Sports, I guess the big question, I like to ask people this anyway, should today be a holiday given that it's the NFL draft?
I wish it was a holiday because, you know, it should be marked on the calendar. I should have known it from the get-go, but if it's just a national holiday, I could have looked at my phone and been like, oh, okay, the draft is today. I can't go see Avengers today. But I just know for a fact that the draft, it's the great middle point for Super Bowl to offseason or to preseason. Everyone's waiting for the draft because then you can start guessing what your schedule is going to be like, figuring out this and this and this and buying your favorite jersey. But before I let you guys go, before you guys let me go, I wanted to give you guys some crazy things that could happen in the first round. I know you guys have probably already heard that Baker Mayfield's going one. It's, mm-hmm. From what I'm understanding, it's set in stone. Baker Mayfield's going one. I can see Josh Allen falling to Arizona at 14. And I can also see Mason Rudolph, who is projected to go in the second round, to actually be drafted as the heir to the throne in New Orleans, not New England.
Ooh.
So those are just a little couple things that I think could happen. I'm kind of banking on some of them, but those are some things that I would watch out for.
I actually like those. I hate using the word hot take because to me, hot take is just a having your actual opinion as opposed to just other people's. But I actually like those, and that leaves my buddy, or not my buddy, maybe my buddy one day. But that leaves Luke Falk, who I'm very high on, maybe to fall to one of those other teams. But Mike, in honor of what you said, I actually do have NFL draft 8 p.m. marked on my calendar. I just took a picture. I'm gonna tweet it out with our next update. But have fun at Disney. Good luck with the draft and everything going forward. Good luck to your Jets. And, you know, at least they have a couple years till Brady's gone. So, you know, a couple years before you have to really worry about it. But more importantly, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the Avengers.
Well, thank you guys very much. I'm glad that you guys were able to squeeze me in. Go Jets. That's all I can say. You know, that's what we're here to do. We're here to win Super Bowls. We may do it every once in a 50 years, but we're going to do it eventually.
Cody, do you have one more thing?
Yeah, Mike, I want to ask you real quick, since as a fan of the of Marvel and the Avengers, who goes number one in your Avengers mock draft 1.0?
Well, they're not an official Avenger yet, but for me personally, it's Star-Lord and the entire Guardians of the Galaxy.
Solid pick. I respect that pick. I didn't think of that. I'm glad they're incorporating them in the movie. It's a nice, solid pick. I think you can win a lot. I think you can win a lot with them.
Yeah. But, I mean, if I had to go with an original Avenger, it would probably be Spider-Man. Because, I mean, he is the original Avenger. He's pretty legit. So
there you go.
There either.
There you go. We go that deep, guys. We go that deep on this show. But no, that's the way this show goes. We go all over the place. But Mike, it's been great. Once again, enjoy Disney, enjoy the Avengers, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you guys later.
And that was Mike Sigmund from WBLZ Sports and Pro Sports Room. Super guy. Love talking football with him. Coach, I know since you're on the limited time right now, I want to immediately jump into the Green Bay Packers. Now, there was speculation that we talked about. There was speculation that they could move up from 14. Obviously, if you're going to move up in the first round, that usually means a quarterback. Do you think they go that route, or do you feel like they'll move down?
No, actually, if they try to move up, I think they're going to go defense. We have a lot of issues across the board in Green Bay when it comes to personnel. We need offensive linemen. We need defensive linemen. We need a pass rusher. We need some corners. We need a running back. So we're kind of open market right now. And with the organization having 12 picks, they're going to strategically move some things around. That's why I said the first 10 picks are going to be very interesting. And then after that, you're going to find a lot of shifting. More so, I think, when you get into day two and between rounds 3 and 5, there's still a lot of depth out there. It's kind of deep with some sleepers, but they're going to be developmental guys. So a lot of people are going to be basically rolling the dice on a couple of players. But I do feel the first round is kind of set, but there will be some shifting and some moving probably somewhere around, I want to say, the 15th pick. Between 15 and 25, you look to see some guys trading out of that or negotiating some better situations for themselves in later rounds. So as far as Green Bay is concerned, we need a couple of things. I don't think quarterback is one of them. I think the backup that we have proved himself last year. He's not ready to start, but he can play. But we most definitely need a running back, and we need some offensive linemen, and we got to have an edge rusher. We don't have anything dominating there. Based on the way the defensive scheme is ran, we use a lot of linebackers, and a lot of them just have not been healthy or been able to stay healthy for the entire season. So we'll get some of those guys back, but now we got to start looking at depth, and I think with some of those picks, we'll probably go and pick up a lot of it between rounds 3 and 5 and add some value to the team this year as a result of that.
Yeah, I compared you guys, you know, not detrimentally, but I compared you guys to the Colts, even though you're a few levels ahead of him. You guys just need bodies and you need depth. And like you said, you haven't really had a big-time pass rusher in a number of years because the linebackers are having to do so much in coverage that they get dinged up and nicked up. And you know, when Clay Matthews can't get all beast mode, that's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would not be surprised if we decide to move up, if we do that, our first pick will be a defensive back. I wouldn't be surprised there. We don't have a lot of depth at that position right now. We don't really have a stud at that position, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's the first pick. But again, like I said, we're kind of open-ended, so I think that we'll be negotiating and trying to get more picks somewhere around 3 and 5.
Yeah, I think that definitely makes sense. You know, what is I don't know how much you've actually been up in the building. I know you've been all over the place here lately. What is kind of the vibe in at least the organization with Gutekunst and McCarthy, and what's the overall vibe of this team? Does it seem like it's still business as usual, or is there a slight bit of aggression going on in Green Bay?
Well, I would say it's going to be a slight bit of aggression because right now you're changing the face. Although the faces are internal, you are changing the structure and the responsibility of those individuals. So I think after the season last year with all the injuries, some disappointing close losses that we had, that now it's just time they're going to be back in grind mode and they're going to get back to the basis of a Green Bay type of playing team. So look for that quick and look for that early. But more importantly, look for that in this draft.
I could definitely see that. Does Green Bay – how did Green Bay kind of react to the news that Garoppolo was leaving New England and going to San Francisco? Was that somebody they were potentially targeting, or are they kind of glad that he's out of the general area?
Well, I'm not going to say they necessarily were potentially targeting him, but again, you know, when you hear these type of high-end free agents dropping into the market, naturally you have to pay attention to that. And I think that if there was an opportunity there, most definitely we would love to have gotten him. But, however, with all the other needs that you have to look at your salary cap plus what it was going to cost to probably make that deal work. So those are the things that you have to look at as well when you're looking at what it's going to take to basically put your team back on the map and put your team back into competitive mode.
I could definitely see that. And are they really going to try to address, to me, one of the biggest glaring needs, and I know you've mentioned this before, is running back. And it seems like they keep trying to go after one big feature back when maybe at some point, instead of Ty Montgomery trying to pull double duty, should they try to get, you know, maybe a couple different guys out of this draft to try to do that committee, like seems to be the new favorite thing.
Well, again, like I said, we need bodies, so we got so much ground that we have to cover. I think some of it even might be surprising to find in some unrestricted free agency. So I think that, you know, these picks that we have, we got to be very careful about what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go and make sure that we cover that ground first. And then after that, let's just see what's going to be out there in the free agent market. I mean, there are a lot of good football players out there that just need opportunities. But we need to also look at what we're going to do quantity base-wise to put ourselves in a position to go get them right now. And will we have the money left over from the draft and looking at the cap space to go out and successfully get that done as well? That's going to be a huge piece of it.
And, you know, without giving away too much, have you spent more time going over some of these draftable prospects, or have they had you on the road going to scout these guys out more in person?
Well, I've been doing a little bit of both. Again, like I said, you know, you want to be able to turn over the rocks, if you will, and try to find good football players, but good quality football players, because, again, this draft is going to be able to address a lot of things, but there's still a lot of question marks out there when it comes to what you're looking for and what you're trying to find. So I think that going into the draft, we should be able to answer a lot of those questions with just simply stepping out saying, hey, we were able to find what we were looking for. But now, you know, in less than about 30 minutes or a little over 30 minutes, that process is going to begin. And I do feel that there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking in the first round, more so than it has been in the past. Like I said, the first 10, 15 picks, I think, are already lined up, and organizations kind of know which direction they want to go with them. Every now and then you always get one or two teams that might just throw a curveball in there just to get into the second and third round with an extra couple of picks. But again, like I said, you know, I really think this draft hinges on rounds 3 through 5 and who has done the best work there in evaluating players and putting together great scouting reports and looking at it from a player-based structure as well as an organizational need to put the best players in their organization to try to win right now and get those sleepers going faster than ever before.
Hey, Coach, I guess you said there are two questions, but maybe two questions combined into one. One,
sure.
Do you have faith in DeShone Kizer if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt during the season, if that happens? And two, do you see the situation that the Packers could draft Notre Dame tackle Mike McGlinchey to eventually or potentially replace Brian Bulaga because he wouldn't take the pay cut they asked. Do you see them drafting McGlinchey to replace him and then maybe just cutting ties to Bulaga because he wouldn't take the pay cut?
Well, I do. To answer the first part of it, yes, the first question, I think they're comfortable in that area. The second question, yes, I do feel that they are going to possibly make that move in the draft because, again, we got to get bodies in. And I'm not just saying we're a MASH unit, but I'm saying we got to have players now that can step up immediately when players go down. And that's something that we've struggled with for the last couple of years. As you notice, we still haven't really gotten a quality running back in a while. So now we have to address that as well. So it's going to be – these 12 picks are going to really, really start molding and shaping what we do with the first six versus what we do with the back half of the other six are going to say a lot about what we've done in preparing for this draft, but more importantly, preparing this roster to go out and win immediately when the season starts.
And then we go from halfway firing you up, Coach, to we might full-blown, we may have to even back off on this subject even, to switch gears in the last few minutes that we have you on. Let's switch gears to the hometown Atlanta Falcons. Now, obviously, at least three of the four of us, and I think Cody's kind of on board as well, obviously, we feel like one of their top needs is to put competition behind Matt Ryan. Do you feel like they're going to do that in the first couple rounds, or do you feel like they're going to maybe try to bring someone in?
Well, I think Atlanta has made their statement. I think the fact that they didn't do anything to extend Matt Ryan as of right now or try to get his deal done quickly as they have in the past points to that they very well need a quarterback, and that's the next move for them. I think that is the only position Atlanta has not did a good job, in my personal opinion, of addressing. I think they've always gone with the one quarterback type system. But again, as you know, when players go down, I mean, that's a very, very important position to have to play. And the way that it is structured normally in the NFL, the backup doesn't get a lot of snaps. So now you're trying to take a quarterback. Either you got to go try to find a veteran who has some playing time under their belt, but they might be long in the tooth, or you have to now get aggressive and go get you a young quarterback, as we did in Green Bay, that can come in and start playing somewhat now, but you don't want to find yourself in a situation of having to guess about that. So that's one of the biggest things that I see. I think Atlanta, I wouldn't be surprised. I think their first move will be defense because it's a safe move for them, but I wouldn't be surprised, again, like I was saying earlier, based on where they're drafting from, that the moves are made to possibly come up and or to trade into some second-round, third-round picks and go get some depth there. And I think quarterback is one of the very big things that they got to address this year in their organization.
Coach, should we be worried at all about what's going on with Julio Jones, him deleting the stuff on social media? Is that a sign that he's unhappy in Atlanta? Because there are a couple receivers out there, like Jarvis Landry, Devontae Adams of the Packers, who are making more money than him on a year-to-year basis. Is this something we should be worried about, or is it just, you know, a guy that, like you said, clearly just wants a fresh start on social media?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, the glass being half empty, half full is based on perspective. I think he's pleased where he is, but I think you got to understand Julio comes out of a background and a pedigree where he's used to winning. And I think that he feels that he's given it enough time now and that they have to do some things differently. I don't think that he's so disgruntled that he takes the social media stuff down just because he's mad with Atlanta. I think it was just a statement being made. It could be a distraction or deterrent for some other things that might be going on. But I think that at this point, Julio – I think he realizes what his net worth is to Atlanta now, and I think he's flexing his veteran muscle, to be quite honest with you. I think he's at a point now where he wants to make sure that the organization is looking in the directions that they need to look to make it viable to win. I mean, once you come off a Super Bowl like that and you're so close, and then more importantly, when you have a year like they had last year, and inevitably you basically – if you beat Philadelphia, you might be that team that's winning the Super Bowl. So when you look at the opponents that went into the NFC Championship that later went on to win the Super Bowl, I mean, Atlanta didn't lose to these teams like by blowouts or anything. So that has to be frustrating as well. So I think right now he's just flexing his muscle, saying, hey, guys, you know, let's not focus on me or Atlanta. Let's focus on what it's going to take to make Atlanta win.
You know, there's something I'd like to see happen. I don't think it would. I'm not trying to make this as a fandom kind of thing, but it kind of makes sense if you think about it. I think if
you're the 49ers and John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, you make a call to Atlanta to see what it would take to try to possibly pry him away, because when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl with Kyle Shanahan as their offensive coordinator, Julio Jones was awesome that year. And I think he would like to be back with Kyle Shanahan. Do you see any situation, any scenario where that could happen, where the 49ers can make the call possibly today? I mean, I'm not saying give up the ninth pick in the draft, or they try to give up a couple draft picks and they acquire Julio Jones, and maybe the Falcons address wide receiver in the draft.
I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta would dangle it as a carrot, but in reality, I don't see Atlanta letting Julio go right now. Although he'll be 30 in February, if I'm not mistaken, he still has a lot of value left at the position of receiver. So if they do make a move like that, I mean, it would cost them draft picks plus money. I don't think they would just alleviate or just make a smooth transition to allow Julio to just be able to go to San Francisco like that. Although it sounds wonderful, I think it would be very costly to San Francisco to even entertain it, but it's going to cost you a lot to try to get it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Coach, before you get out of here, I'll give you the option. I'm going to write these down. I'll give you the option. Either give me the position or player that you think the Falcons should go for the first round, or give me the quarterback they should target to back up Matt Ryan.
Wow, I don't know. That's a tough one. I think the position that they might very well go is, again, I think they're going to go for someone defensively. I think they got to build some things interior where they lost a couple of things. They got to have another inside guy. But I'm going to safely say I think that if he's there on the board, I think Deron Payne goes to Atlanta out of Alabama. I think that's the player that they put on the defensive line as a safe pick.
Wow, I like it, and I know Reggie will like it, but we'll get into more Reggie stories in the next couple weeks. But, Coach, I know you need to get out of here, so we appreciate you calling in and help making this a great show tonight, and we will see you in the next couple weeks.
All right.
Of course, that was the great Coach Hill, who I don't know. I would take the Jets job, wouldn't you, Cody?
The Jets job, I don't know. Does one work for Woody Johnson? He likes to fire people like crazy. And I mean,
he's
when
busy.
Was the last
he's
time
busy.
That
team his brother's running
true.
The team right now. You know, I feel like he's running the team a little better. So I mean, as long as Woody's in the White House, which wow, that could be a whole different joke right there. With him being in the White House, then you know, maybe this is a good thing for the Jets.
I mean, I like Todd Bowles as a coach. I think they need to give him time. I think the players really respect him. I can't sit here and say I sit there and watch every play of a Jets game because, well, there are a lot more games that are more exciting. I did watch them play week two when they played the Raiders and the Raiders absolutely just took them apart in Oakland. But then the Raiders were expected to win that game in a disappointing season. But the Jets have pieces. You know, watching them get rid of the defensive line they had with Sheldon Richardson and Mo Wilkerson and all, you know, all the pieces they moved and to me, I just don't have faith in them drafting a quarterback and developing him because, I mean, who was the last good quarterback that they developed? Chad Pennington? I mean, they took him in the first round in 2000 and he was a good quarterback for them, but like, can you name another quarterback that they drafted and developed who did anything for them?
Yeah, that's a good point. And honestly, I could argue that they haven't really developed any quarterback that Pennington and Sanchez kind of developed themselves.
Well, I mean, Sanchez's first 2 years under Rex Ryan, they went to the AFC Championship game in back-to-back years, but no one remembers that. They're always going to remember Sanchez running into his own players behind and fumbling the ball, a.k.a. the butt fumble. Everyone's always going to remember about Sanchez. And I just hope that he doesn't, you know, Sam Darnold doesn't fall in that same line of quarterbacks that come out too early from USC like Sanchez did. And there was another
Matt
one, Matt Leinart. But there's another one that I'm drawing a blank on that came out too early, you know, they only played one full year. It wasn't USC, it was a kid from Trubisky. Trubisky played one full year in college, and he came out, you know, out of North Carolina. It's still young. He had flashes last year, but with Darnold, I think he's the best pro-ready quarterback. And I mean, I watch a lot of his games because of the Pac-12, but I'm not really in love with any of these quarterbacks. I think a lot of them have different intangibles. I like Rosen for his
just the way he is and his drive, just listening mm-hmm. to how bad he wants to win. But if you want to be in New York, you got to handle that media. And, I mean, I know the Jets are the second fiddle team in New York behind the Giants, but still, you have to be able to handle the New York media. It's not as soft as it is out here on the – I mean, the West Coast, the media is a little softer on things. And I think that New York could be a bad landing spot for, you know, Rosen or Darnold, who can't, you know, if they expect to have softball questions. But when you're taking it as the face of the franchise, especially with the Jets, Todd Bowles and his staff need to develop them, and I just don't know if they can really do it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I want to continue on Atlanta just for another minute or so, just float a few more things out there, and then we're going to attack your San Francisco 49ers and my Dallas Cowboys, who are hosting tonight's event, and we'll probably be gracious hosts that will, I don't know, possibly Irish goodbye at our own party. But that's a whole different thing. Reggie actually floated this thing out about Julio that I wanted to add, but a new coach was on short time. Reggie floated this thing out that he feels like this is Julio using his veteran muscle to push the envelope on Matt's new contract. And that's not a bad thought, but see, Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan are in the same boat. Technically, no matter how unhappy they are with their contract, I think Aaron's got 2 years left he's got 2 years left. Matt's got the one, but see, here's all that those prospective teams have to say. Hey, we're going to let you play out your contract, and then we're going to franchise tag you 2 years, and then you'll be 35, 36, 37 years old. Have a good day. So, to me, at this point, Matt Ryan doesn't have that much leverage, because all they have to – if he even hints towards he might leave, then they just go up and get Lamar Jackson and go, well, have a good one.
Yeah, with the Falcons, they do – I mean, I like Coach a lot, but I disagree. I don't think I don't have faith in Deshaun Kizer to win a game if Aaron Rodgers goes down. And I think that they both should look to address the backup quarterback kind of early if they can. I mean, the Packers need to protect Rodgers so he doesn't go down with an injury. But I think that they need to address the quarterback early. Same with the Falcons, being able to give Matt Ryan – to push Matt Ryan to be even greater than he was 2 years ago when he was the MVP. Because last year he was kind of mediocre. He threw a lot of picks. The Falcons just – yeah, they won that playoff game against the Rams in L.A., but he just didn't look good against the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles are, you know, the Eagles are a good team. But so I think you need to draft someone to push them to eventually maybe be the heir apparent if they don't work out a contract. Because who's their backup? It's Matt Schaub still, isn't it?
I think they actually let him go, because if it's not him, then it's Matt Sims, who I'm not sure he's on the roster either.
I would say the one guy that I was thinking they could get is the kid from Richmond. Is it Kyle Luletta? Because he won't be a valid because he's a prospect a lot of people like. He kind of reminds, just the way that people talk about him, he kind of reminds me of Garoppolo. Garoppolo is a little different because he's only played 7 games and he got the biggest contract for quarterback. But still, with Luletta, I think he could be a good fit in Atlanta just as a backup because he can learn under Matt Ryan, and he's a guy that played at a small school. But as we've seen over the last few drafts with quarterbacks coming out of small schools, with Carson Wentz and Jimmy Garoppolo, they have a lot of upside. And maybe this guy, since we didn't watch him and he did so well, he could be a guy that thrives in Atlanta. But who knows? I mean, but they do need to address the quarterback position. And I can see where Reggie's coming from with the Julio Jones thing, with getting Matt Ryan a better contract. But I can also see that backfiring on him and the Falcons to say, you know, well, they're not going to release him like the Cowboys did with Dez. But I can see them, you know, trying to trade him to somewhere else.
No, I'm saying that he's using Julio's using his veteran muscle to push Matt into coming around and, hey, just sign the contract so we can get back to playing again, because this whole thing's getting ridiculous and you're not you shouldn't get top money. You're not the top guy.
Well, no, I definitely see him doing that, but I can also see if this backfires on him. The Falcons are ultimately like, all right, well, you know, we can just get rid of you. You're easily replaceable. As Coach said, he's going to be 30. And mm-hmm. It's so crazy to think that Julio Jones is going to be 30 years old. But, I mean, I hope it doesn't turn into one of those situations where his skill just diminishes like Roddy White did when Roddy White was there. Because those two guys were dominant when they're the 1-2. But as we all saw, Roddy White, his skills diminished as time went on. And it was hard to cut bait with him because he did so much in Atlanta coming out of UAB. But they did it, and Julio Jones took over. But I don't think they have the receiver on the roster right now that could take over if Julio eventually, you know, his skills diminish, so they try to get rid of him.
So to close up the Falcon thing here, I'll pose the same question to you. Either what did they do with this first round pick, or is there a quarterback they target?
I wouldn't go quarterback in the first round. I think they have bigger needs. I agree with what Coach is saying. I think they need to address some things on defense before they would go for a quarterback. I would look if I was them. I would look at receiver possibly. I mean, you can always add offense to help Matt Ryan out and someone to eventually take over for Julio Jones. Where are they picking at? I haven't really looked to see where the Falcons are picking at in the draft. I know they made the playoffs, so I'm sure they're in the 20s somewhere. But I can see if DJ Moore from Maryland was.
Yeah, they're somewhere in the mid 20s, I think.
I can see someone if DJ Moore is there from Maryland, maybe they should look at him, or Calvin Ridley, another wide receiver from Alabama, to maybe replace Julio Jones, because I know Julio Jones is actually working out with Alabama players, so maybe he talks with Calvin Ridley. He might be a guy that can help him out, but I can see them going that way. But they have some holes in their defense they could probably address first. But the quarterback one, I think you can address that later in the draft. There's some guys, maybe you mentioned Luke Falk could be a guy, Luletta from Richmond, even Mason Rudolph maybe in the second round if a team doesn't reach and take him in the first. So go defense and then try to find a receiver or quarterback in the next couple rounds after.
They picked number 26th for the first time ever, even though we're being yelled at by the text line. Nobody told us they're picking 26th. I found it myself, so boo on you guys. But, no, Luke Falk's my guy. I missed it last time I said it because I picked the guy that was in Green Bay. They just traded away. I just forgot his name. I was off on that one. But I think Luke Falk, wherever he goes, not only am I going to be a fan, but I feel like maybe the Falcons should trade back into the top of the second round and grab Luke Falk there and pick up some picks later down the road to, like you said, address wide receiver, address some defensive needs. I think picking up a couple extra picks will actually help them a little more. And I'm not sure. I'm looking at the second round. It goes Cleveland, the New York Giants, Cleveland again, the Colts. I feel like Cleveland should be back in this round again, but I'm not sure. Maybe the Buccaneers at 6 or the Bears at 7 in the second round. I could see maybe one of them trying to come up and grab somebody. So, in my opinion, they should trade back, because the last time they traded up, yeah, you got Julio Jones, but it took you about 3 or 4 years to recover from that trade. It's just, if there's not somebody at 26 you're really, just really in love with, I think you move on.
I completely agree. I think, like I said, you try to maybe trade back, or you try to get that quarterback receiver in the second or third round, because they need to address it. And I like the idea of pushing Matt Ryan. I don't know if he really needs the push, because he did just win an MVP 2 years ago, but he kind of underperformed last year, at least in my opinion, watching from afar. But after the expectations that he had from the come up the year they went to the Super Bowl. But I don't know how much of that is playing in Steve Sarkisian's offense compared to playing in Kyle Shanahan's offense, because we all saw how well Jimmy Garoppolo performed in Shanahan's offense and how well Matt Ryan did. But I don't know, maybe having a second year under Sark's offense, that might help him out. But we'll see. It just they need to address some positions they have, because their running back position is strong with Freeman and Tevin Coleman. So they're good there. But they just need to get another receiver to play opposite of Julio Jones and maybe eventually, like I said, replace him. So time will tell with them. I mean, the draft starts here in what, 16
about
minutes?
About a
or so?
Quarter hour, yeah.
So we're getting closer, and we'll see. We'll see if Baker Mayfield really goes number one, or if that was all these reports coming out if they're real, if they're false. Because like they always say, this is the biggest lying season of the year.
I mean, I hope he is, because right before this show went on, I did buy us all Baker Mayfield Cleveland jerseys, and I customized them with our names on the sleeves. So I really hope they do pick him first overall now, or we're going to have some really awesome white elephant gifts come this Christmas.
Yeah. I want to see what they do. Because if they take him at one and he busts, it's just another guy to add to that long list of quarterbacks they've had since they came back to Cleveland. And as someone that grew up not far from Cleveland, who was always told to hate Cleveland, I don't like Cleveland sports, but I want to see the Browns at least be decent again. Well, just decent for the first time, because that that one year they went 10-6 and they played the Steelers in the playoffs with Tim Couch and Kelly Holcomb as quarterback. They really had no shot winning that year. Then they had that 10-6 years with Derek Anderson and Braylon Edwards and Romeo Crennel, but that was it. They haven't had a winning record since. And that was, I think that was Joe Thomas's rookie year, and that's the only time he ever had a winning record. I believe that was his rookie year. So that was forever ago. Then, you know, Joe Thomas retires.
Yeah, it was either his rookie year or it was the year before he got there. I'm trying to remember which. Either way, he's going to be the Hall of Famer that's going to go into the Hall of Fame with the worst overall regular season record, and that is a crying shame. But I'm going to make it real quick with my Dallas Cowboys. Clearly, I think we need offensive line depth. I think we need maybe a pass rusher, definitely some defensive back help. But beyond that, we don't need a whole lot. I don't think we need a number one receiver. This scheme is a lot like the Patriots, uses a lot of crosses and misdirection, and you just need a bunch of B's and C's. You don't need the A that Doves was during his time. So as far as my Cowboys are concerned, we just need a couple pieces, and that's why we don't need a Dez Bryant. But I want to go into San Francisco, as you mentioned. You did say a couple years ago, at least here in Atlanta, under Kyle Shanahan, that Julio was awesome, which he was. It's one of his best years, and Matt Ryan was the MVP. Now, as this is all played out, I actually think you should almost give those awards to Kyle Shanahan, because as much as I like Beathard out there, he played out of his mind under the Shanahan scheme, and then Garoppolo gets there and blooms even more. So I'm kind of starting to think that some of the best numbers and schemes that have come out of Atlanta and San Francisco have a lot more to do with Kyle Shanahan than they did the players involved.
Yeah, I like Shanahan runs a great scheme on offense, and that's why they called him, you know, they always say he's one of the best young offensive coaches in the league and one of the best play callers in the league, because he is. He took that team had no talent, really. I'm not saying they didn't have any talent, because they have more talent than you and I do, and we consider and critique them all we want, but realistically, they're on the field playing in the NFL, and we're sitting here on, you know, talking about them. But sure. What the players they brought in the draft last year with John Lynch, and then re-signing Garoppolo and even trading for him and seeing how well he performed, they're moving in the right direction. And if this year's draft is a little weird, because it's a lot of uncertainty, because you don't know what's going to happen with Reuben Foster and that whole case. Now that the report is his girlfriend lied about him hitting her, so you have no idea how that's going to turn out. The net effect if the Niners want to take, you know, Roquan Smith if he's there, or Tremaine Edmonds, or maybe they trade back. I mean, my crazy scenario that I think that would happen, and this is just, I guess you could say this is a hot take, this is something I'd love to see. I'd love to see them sit there at 9 and Josh Rosen's available. The Patriots make the phone call, because they made that trade for Garoppolo. They make the phone call, and the Patriots trade up, take the eventual successor to Brady at 9. The 49ers get 23 and 31, and they end up getting two. They have another year of two first-round draft picks like they had last year, where they took Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster in the first round last year, and it's another good start to the draft for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. But if not, you know, you take they still need a linebacker, I think, so I would take either Edmonds or Roquan Smith. If not, I wouldn't mind seeing them take I'd love to see Saquon Barkley fall there, but he won't. I did a mock draft for work, and I had them taking Saquon Barkley, but I don't see that happening. I'd like to see them get one of those two guys, or potentially draft Quentin Nelson if he's available, if he falls, because they could use another guard. But realistically, it's going to be either Edmonds or Roquan Smith.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I saw your mock draft. That was one of the only ones that I liked, that you went out there and took the reach that Barkley would fall that far. But, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But, I mean, honestly, I think San Francisco as a whole, as a organization, is somewhere between Green Bay and Indianapolis, where, yes, you do need more bodies and more depth and more just overall at least decent to good players, people to fill in roles and such, but you're honestly not that far off either, and there's a chance that given how this draft goes, I mean, we saw what New Orleans was able to do with a solid draft. There's a chance that, you know, San Francisco might leapfrog people like Green Bay with this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it happening. I mean, John Lynch has done a nice job in his first year as GM, and you have Kyle Shanahan, who knows what he's doing because, you know, learned from his dad, and he's just a great offensive mind. They have a great scouting staff with Adam Peters and others, others there. And so I can see them having another solid draft. I mean, Lynch was able to get, you know, like you said, two first-round draft picks last year, excuse me. And they end up having a nice draft. They found players like Matt Breida and Kendrick Bourne, who are undrafted players who stepped up big time for the Niners last year. So I have all the faith in the world in Lynch and Shanahan to keep turning this thing around. They end up finishing 6-10 after starting the year 1-10. So that, you know, five straight wins when Garoppolo took over as a starting quarterback was nice. We'll see if that continues going into the season. I have faith that it will, but you know, their schedule is a little tough, but you know, the draft tonight will tell, and hopefully they get, you know, address some needs at linebacker or offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe we've talked about as much draft. We talked a little more than we actually had planned initially, which is fine. That's the way this show goes. But in the last few minutes, I want to get into some other stuff. Real quickly, I just want to say that the Georgia Swarm will have their season finale this Saturday. They have a game Sunday as well, but it's not here. Their home finale is at the Infinite Energy Center at 7:05. Pretty much, if they win at least one of these last two games, they will be the 1 or 2 seed in the playoffs. So go Swarm as far as that. Greg Hardy's going to be in the UFC. Good for him that he has he can take this as a shot, and people can say I'm better than this. But you know what? Go look at all the stuff Greg Hardy has done. Go look at all the story of things that he probably did do that nobody's proven yet. And, you know, if he found a way to get paid to punch people in the face as opposed to arrested, then good on Greg Hardy.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to the Storm. I hope that works out for them. But the one thing, you know,
Swarm.
The one thing we
Swarm,
do
actually,
do,
but yeah.
Oh, that's a Storm. Swarm, sorry.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
The one thing I want to see tell you about that we really get into, and you're Atlanta, and hopefully everyone listening from Atlanta can listen and learn something. You're lucky. You have Ronald Acuna Jr. out there playing in left field for you. This kid is going to be special for the Braves. Pay attention to him. He's a generational talent. He could be the next Mike Trout / Bryce Harper. I don't think he's in the ilk of, you know, there's prospects that come up that are generational, like Trout and Harper, and then there's guys that are top prospects. They get the billing like that, but they kind of, you know, they're fringe players. And one of them is Dansby Swanson, but he's having a nice year too. It's short for the Braves. Watch this kid. Go watch him at SunTrust Field. I'm sure he can outrun the freeze in a race as well. This kid is special, and he did home run, his first home run today, and second deck shot in Cincinnati. I know it's Cincinnati, Great American Ballfield, but ballpark. But this kid is special, and I'm hoping that he has a long career in Atlanta, and you know, I hope he does big things there. And they have so much talent that the Braves are going to be a team to be a force to be reckoned with, especially the NL East, for years to come if they don't start doing it this year. So get out there, watch this kid play, and just pay attention because he's going to be special for them.
Yeah, and from everything I've heard, I'm hoping to get out maybe here in the next couple of weeks and get to see him play live. Of course, then that brings up my question. They signed one of my favorite players in Joey Batts last week who, you know, Jose, we still would love to have you on the show. Been saying that ever since you started following me on Twitter. He did follow me first. Probably just typed it in wrong, but either way, still love to have him on. I just want to know what they're going to do with him, if he's just kind of the rotational bench guy, because their outfield is pretty set. Like, there's between now Acuna, you get Enciarte, who is basically the new Andrew Jones out there with definitely a slightly better bat. And you get Markakis, who is just cemented himself in right field. I don't know where Joey Batts is supposed to play.
So everything I've read and paid attention to with the Braves, he's supposed to play third base. I mean, they have Ryan Flaherty playing there right now, and he's having a nice year. He's in 3-10, but Joey Batts, or, you know, I watched him play third base for the Pirates before he had the big home run years with the Blue Jays, but I see him playing third. I see him doing well. He'll be a nice guy to have in that, I guess, a nice guy to have in that locker room or clubhouse, and hopefully he's able to help this young team because they have so many good players. They have Ozzie Albies, who's a great second baseman. Freeman, you have.
You have Dansby Swanson. Acuna went 3-for-4 today. So he has 4 hits in his first 2 games, which is incredible. You have NCRK. You have Preston Tucker, who had a great start to the year, and he's kind of fizzled out a little bit. But, you know, he'll come back. They have a lot more pieces in their farm system. They have young pitching, like Sean Newcomb, that's going to, you know, keep getting better. I'm hoping that, like I said, they keep this going, and eventually they take over as the best team in that division from the Nationals, because the Nationals have been like the cream of the crop in that division. And, you know, the Mets are playing well this year too, which nobody saw coming. That's a whole different – we could probably do a whole show on the Mets and how well they're playing, and then all the dysfunction with Matt Harvey. So, yeah, the Braves – watch Joey Bats play third and maybe occasionally fill in right field when, you know, Marquez needs a day off or something like that. But he'll be playing third base for a while for them.
Okay, I totally forgot about him playing third base in Pittsburgh up there. So that makes a lot of sense. But even though you had to wait the entire show – you mentioned it a little bit, but I will give you the official floor in case you want to say more about it with Manaea's no-hitter against Boston, who is the hottest team in right now. They're outscoring their opponent on average by like 6 to 8 runs a game, and yet they couldn't hit this Oakland A pitcher's stuff. You know, I don't know if you were there or if you were somewhere in the vicinity or even watched it, but what do we need to know about this no-hitter?
Well, Manaea came over He came over from the Royals in 2015 when they traded Ben Zobrist. They touted him as the throwing Simone because the kid had real long hair, and he had the look of an Oakland A. Like, he had the body, he had the personality. He just looked like a guy that would fit perfectly with that A's clubhouse. And I've been watching him since then. He had a good rookie year. He was okay last year, but this year he's been unbelievable. But going to that start, I'm like, he did this against Chris Sale. It's not like he went up and did this against, you know, a fifth starter for Boston.
Or one of us.
He did it against Chris Sale, which arguably might be the best left-handed pitcher in baseball, behind Clayton Kershaw. Sorry. So you haven't gone up against Sale, who's dominant every time he goes out there. You have the Red Sox lineup, who just came off of sweeping the loser Angels in Anaheim because they couldn't even beat them, and Anaheim was supposed to be the team in that division this year behind Houston. So you have them coming into Oakland. I was there Friday night. The A's go up 3-0, and then they give up 3 runs, and then they end up losing the game 7-3 on a grand slam. But going into Saturday, it's like, all right, you got this hot, red-hot lineup, and Manaea just shut them down. I mean, there's a couple controversial plays, I guess, if you're a Boston fan who, I mean, they cry about everything. I know this because I lived in Pittsburgh from three-quarters of my life. So they cry about everything. Woe is us, and everything, you know, everything's going against them. You've won like 400 titles in the last 15 years. You could lose a game to the A's. So just watching them get no hit by Sean Manaea and the A's is so great, because the A's are they're up and coming this year. I'm so glad some of the young talent like Manaea and Matt Chapman, who might be one of the best players in baseball that nobody knows about, because, well, one, no one pays attention to the A's, even in the Bay Area, which is unfortunate. Matt Olson is a great home run hitter. They have so much young talent, and to see this happen, it puts him on the stage. Manaea is a quiet kid, but his interviews after the game were great. And just to see him go out there and strike out 10 guys and only walk 2, that was awesome to see that. And it makes it so much better since it was against Boston. The only other team I'd rather see it against happen would probably be the Yankees, because of that lineup with Judge and Stanton and everyone, but seeing it happen against Boston, who was the hottest team in baseball, where the A's took 2 or 3 from them, it was really great to see.
And in a way, I'm tagging. Do you know what Sean Anthony Manaea's, I guess Junior the Third, what his Twitter handle is?
Yeah, it's Baby SM Giraffe.
Do you have any idea what that's about? He's got a picture of a giraffe up here too. That is crazy.
I don't know why they've always been calling him. They call Brandon Belt the giraffe, the Giants first baseman. I think it's because they're tall and they're skinny and they have a long neck. Maybe that's why. But yeah, they've been calling Manaea I've heard that nickname for years. Manaea hasn't tweeted in like 2 years though, so I wouldn't really hold your breath on him saying anything back.
Oh, I'm not worried about it. I was just, you know, I would make him the social media shout out, but he's probably busy trying to figure out how to no hit whoever he's about to pitch against. As long as it's not my Yankees, I'm okay with that. But yeah, I have to agree with you. As a lifelong Yankee fan, I never understand why Boston complains so much. They seem to win championships of the major sports more than anybody, between the Bruins and the Patriots and the Red Sox for all those years. That you know, it's I get it when Philadelphia fans do it, because they haven't won all that much up until recently. But Boston fans, sit down, shut up. We don't want to hear it. You don't have Johnny Damon anymore. You don't have Big Poppy. And you got rid of your coach because Tito was great. So, you know, don't want to hear it anymore.
I agree with you. And real quick, Manaea actually pitches tomorrow night in Houston against Dallas Keuchel. So you have two great lefties going up against each other. That's going to be a good one to watch if you need something to do on a Friday night. You got round two and three of the draft. You got Keuchel, Manaea tomorrow night at 8 on the East Coast, 5 here. So that'll be good one to watch.
I'm gonna look to see if we get that game locally, because I might have to at least DVR it, if nothing else, because that's quite interesting. And quick update, the Browns now have less than 10 minutes and are officially on the clock, I believe. Yeah, their graphic's showing something completely different, but they are officially on the clock. The draft show has started. Is there anything we missed?
No, I think we can save things like the NBA playoffs for next week, because, there really isn't anything exciting. And the draft's about to start, and I'm sure you want to watch it, and I'm going to pop it on here in a second. We'll see how that turns out, because I really want to see if Baker Mayfield really goes number one.
Oh, I do have a suggestion for you out there, and it's going to tie into the Atlanta United had a big win over the LA Galaxy. I had a lot of really cool notes on it, but at the same time, all I need to tell you is the Galaxy are one of the better teams in the league. It looks like Atlanta is probably the second best, and they just completely smothered them up, never let them get into space a whole lot, never let them beat them, and they frustrated the LA Galaxy's newest acquisition, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Trust me, the more you say it, the easier it is to roll off the tongue there. But Zlatan is definitely a very cool guy. If you've ever heard any of his media stuff, a lot of people say he comes off a little cocky. I was like, it's just a little overconfidence, but it's because he's been one of the top five players in the world behind Ronaldo and Messi. And Messi is the only guy that he actually claims is better than himself. But just listen to the guy. He wants everybody to believe in him so that he can be the one to take you to the promised land. But my suggestion to you, if the LA Galaxy or ever anywhere near you, go see Zlatan Ibrahimovic play. It's definitely worth your time.
Well, as I say, every year they play the California Classico, and that's between the Galaxy and the San Jose Earthquake. And I've been wanting to get down to Avaya Stadium in San Jose. It's only like a 15-minute drive for me, and Avaya has North America's largest outdoor bar at their stadium.
Oh yeah.
So it's a great, their pitch is great. It's a great setup for this, you know, just the fan idea. The pitch is even better. The whole setup is great. And it's a great thing for people here, because Dave Cavill, the president of the A's, used to be the president of the San Jose Earthquake, and he helped get that stadium built. So that's why a lot of people here have optimism that the A's will get a new ballpark, because Cavill got the Earthquake and new stadium built. So I need to get down there. It's been open for like 4 years now, and I haven't made it down there. But it's on my list of things to do. I played soccer in high school. I'm a soccer fan, but I haven't carved out the time to go down there and watch the Earthquake play, and they're usually pretty good. So I've been trying to see how they're doing this year. I haven't really looked too much, because it's you know, lots going on. But I definitely will get down there, and I want to go see them play the Galaxy, just for many reasons, mainly because it's the Galaxy, and yet they have so many great players play for them with, you know, Lynn and Donovan was there, and Beckham. So I'll definitely try to make it down there.
Yeah, definitely try to do that. As you know, in the last few minutes of Sports Club here, let me cue up the music as our exit out. Before I get into what you're doing this weekend, Cody, I will go ahead and let people know, as we always say, no matter what coast, no matter what city we're in, if you see any of us that are associated with Impact Media out at one of these events we talk about, then merely all you have to do is take a selfie with us, tag us in it, We will put it up on our websites, all of our social media things, and we will send you swag. I'm not making that up. Our shirts should be coming in pretty soon. If not, we'll find some other great thing to give to you. One place you can find me this weekend, I will be at the Atlanta United game. I believe they're playing the Montreal Impact, which would probably be the team I would pick, given that I call myself the Impact, had we not had a team here in Atlanta. But we'll be meeting up with Jason Longshore, who was on this show just a couple weeks ago. But I will probably not be very hard to miss. I will probably be in Atlanta United gear. I will. I'm actually kind of working on the Zlatan / Pringle can guy kind of facial hair for now, because no reason not to have facial hair during the spring. And since I'm about a week and a half out of needing a haircut, or a week and a half past of needing a haircut, my faux hawk right now is more Sonata from New Japan than it is Mike the Miz Mizanin. So I'm going to be pretty hard to miss. Cody, what do you got this weekend?
I don't know yet for sure, but I think we're going to go. I'm thinking we're going to go down to San Jose and watch game two, Sharks Golden Knights.
Ooh.
Saturday night. We'll see. You got Penguins Capitals on right now. I'm not watching it. Unfortunately, I'm watching the draft. I'll go back and forth. I have no faith. I have all the faith in the world of the Penguins to win again. The Capitals are losers. They can't get out of the second round. This is the fourth time they played the Penguins, and they lost all four times. You know, they've lost every time beforehand. So I'm not really worried. I want to see the Sharks and Golden Knights. That's going to be a great series.
It definitely is. And I feel like that since the Golden Knights are one of the teams that I follow pretty regularly, and I was very excited the same way I'm excited for the Seattle franchise coming up. I feel like we should figure out some friendly wager, but, you know, for lack of time, maybe we'll figure that out between now and game two.
Definitely, yeah. We'll figure something out.
We'll figure something out, but I guess that's going to do it for us. So shout out to Coach Hill that joined us a little earlier. Shout out to our guest, Mike Sigmund from WBLZ Sports and Pro Sports Room. We talked some Jets and draft with him. And thanks to you, Cody, for joining us as well. This is another great edition of the Sports Club. Enjoy the draft. I just saw three Cowboy greats. They were all quarterbacks, one of which, Roger Staubach, has never seen a football he didn't want to throw. He just threw it about 23 rows deep. So I hope you had insurance.
Wait,
whoever
hold on.
Caught that. What?
Hold on, where's Romo at? Why isn't Romo there? He's the most popular quarterback of all time. Where's he at? Is he calling games with Nance?
He might be calling the draft action up in a deer blind that we just don't see yet on a scissor lift.
By the way, I don't know if you saw that, but I think Troy Aikman just threw a pass to a bunch of Steelers fans, and the Steelers finally beat the Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
Well, and I was just gonna say if we go back in Troy's career, he threw a handful of passes to some Steelers, so I mean it's deja vu, I guess. But, no, Troy's the second best in Dallas Cowboy history. I'll give him credit for that. It goes Romo, it goes Troy in my book, and then we'll talk about the rest. But guess that's going to do it for us. We both are going to go watch a lot of hockey and a little bit of this draft. So for Cody, for Reggie, for the coach, for John Joseph and our guest, Mike Sigmund, this has been Sports Club. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Think big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up. Think big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up. Think big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute now.
Wobble baby wobble baby wobble baby wobble.
Yeah.
Wobble baby wobble. Wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby,
wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
A lot better when you win.